I think the one thing to look at is the length of the contract. Will it be a two-year deal or a five-year deal? If Davis goes the short-term route, the two-year contract, that would put him into free agency in 2022. And all that money that he left on a table in New Orleans from the Supermax, he can earn all that back. And that's also when LeBron James will become a free agent also.
That was the voice of our friend Bobby Marks from ESPN.com. He's the ESPN NBA front office insider. And we figured the NBA season just ended. The Timberwolves, as we go into the offseason, are at the center of speculation.
Reckless speculation.
In addition to write that down today on this Wednesday, let's just start the show with some reckless Timberwolves speculation and get some thoughts from Bobby Marks. So we'll do that. Quick shout out to Federated Insurance. Federated has been supporting local healthcare facilities and workers through this pandemic year. In fact, they donated 18,000 N95 respirator masks to Owatonna Hospital and several outdoor blue lights for the Owatonna Clinic building. Federated Insurance employees are donating their time, talent, and financial resources to help our communities. Team members have produced masks and face shields for healthcare workers and first responders and caregivers. And they bring that same spirit of giving also to everything they do, but also your business. They just they build those great connections with business owners. And you can find out more about all the community work and all of the business-related work that Federated does at federatedinsurance.com. At Federated, remember, it's our business to protect yours.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Reckless speculation. You want reckless speculation?
Oh, you know this ain't gonna happen.
How about reckless trade speculation?
We woke up in a speculative mood today here. We've, you know, the Vikings, sort of the wave of the Seahawks loss has passed. And the twin season is over. But now that the NBA season is over, we said, let's get into some Timberwolves discussion, Judd. There's nothing we like more than to speculate on things that could happen on this show. And Bobby Marks, who's been he's been a friend of this show. He's been a friend of our friend Doogie as part of the Score North podcast network. And he is an ESPN NBA front office insider. And with the Timberwolves among the teams at the center of the conversation moving into this NBA offseason, they possess the number one overall pick. They're in the hunt for a third star player. We would love, Bobby, to just pepper you with some Timberwolves stuff if you're down for it.
That sounds good. Let's go.
So you have, and we should direct people to ESPN.com. You have to be an insider, but Bobby essentially lays out for all of the teams in the NBA, all of their tradable assets, all of their valuable assets, players that likely will not be touchable in trades. And so I think my first question to you is, from a front office perspective, as the Timberwolves look to be relevant in the Western Conference again, what do you think is their best roster bolstering path? Is it to keep the number one pick and draft who they think is the best young player and put that player with D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns and hope that that player is the third star? Or is it to leverage that pick for an established player that could help maybe a little bit more immediately?
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime you can go out and get a third star, that is always the goal. The hard part is there's not many third stars available out there in a trade compared to the number one pick, and you have that player on a four-year contract at a really low salary. I mean, look at what happened in Miami with Tyler Hero, right? I mean, you've got, the 13th or 14th pick, and now you've got him locked up making $4 million a year, and he's a really good player. Is he a franchise player? No, but he is part of something. I think if you're Gerson Rosas, you are canvassing the league. It's kind of comparable to the year that Anthony Bennett went number one. I don't want to say that the number one pick is going to be there. I just think there's so much uncertainty as far as who that number one pick is, because it could be LaMelo Ball, it could be James Wiseman, it could be Anthony Edwards. Like, we've got a wide net of players here. So, yeah, I think the first thing that the Timberwolves have probably been doing already is canvassing the league, finding what is the value of the number one pick. And then you kind of put that on your big whiteboard. And then when you head into, you know, November 18th, that has your options there. But I mean, if you can find somebody as that third guy to pair with Carl and D'Angelo, I think that's probably the ultimate goal. But the trade part of it, you know, the trades are hard. I mean, trades are really hard, and you're probably giving up more than the number one pick if you're going to get a third guy.
Give me, Bobby, what you see as the most plausible star-like player from a team that might be willing to make a deal and would be attracted to that Wolves top pick.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you an example. I think probably at the end of the day, Victor Oladipo probably becomes available. Because I think, and it's just the math lines up. You know, if he doesn't sign an extension and they can only offer up to $112 million over 4 years, it's probably less than maybe what he can make when he's healthy. He goes into this upcoming year as on an expiring contract. And usually history tells you a star level guy on an expiring contract, right? Like there, you know, you kind of have to take offers unless you're Toronto and Kawhi, right? Like that kind of just, that doesn't happen. So I think that's where you're looking at, that's the roll of the dice, right? So if you are going to sacrifice something really of good value, if it's number one, if it's 17, if it's another player, to take back a guy on an expiring with the uncertainty that he's going to commit long term, that's a big risk compared to as far as going the safe bet for that player who's on a, you know, a 3 or 4 year contract. But yeah, I mean, we haven't really gotten that disgruntled veteran who wants out yet. I mean, I think we're kind of in the beginning stages of that. And I'm not saying that's, you know, the Giannis's. I'm thinking, you know, what happens in Washington with Bradley Beal, right? That's probably one guy. I don't think Devin Booker is probably obtainable right now because of the success they had. I mean, if they went to Orlando and went 0-8, I would probably said, yeah, you know, like, where is this team going? But I think they're probably living off that really good stretch of games in Orlando and seeing where that team goes. But that's kind of, yeah, that's kind of the process that, you know, that the Timberwolves are going to go through, is you're almost going to sit back and let's see what happens in the next month if there is a disgruntled all-star that maybe has the goal is to have length on the contract. Like the expiring route, you're playing Russian roulette with that. You really are, because then you have a year of recruiting that player, but when he leaves, it's a little more challenging. And I mentioned Kawhi earlier because like there was already a really good foundation in place. Like there was already a proven track record. And I know they moved DeMar, but you had Kyle there. Siakam was still developing. Fred has started to develop. You already had Ibaka. You went out and got, you know, you had Gasol. So you just kind of added Kawhi to that mix. And it was worth it because if he left and you still had those guys in place, we're here, man, if you get a number three guy and he leaves, that's, you know, that sets you back a little bit.
Oladipo is an interesting one. I think that's the first time I've really heard his name pop up here. And I think because he's only played 55 games the last couple of years because of injuries. But when he came onto the scene and really broke out that first year with the Pacers, I think if we were talking about that version of Victor Oladipo with multiple years on the contract like he had in 2017-18, I would be very curious about trading that number one pick. He seems like a great buy low candidate and a get healthy candidate, but I don't know if I would personally trade the number one pick for him. Would I trade the other first round pick that the Wolves have and take a shot on Victor Oladipo? Maybe. I mean, what do you think of that? Like, could you get Victor Oladipo for a just outside the lottery first round pick?
Probably not. I think you probably could do that closer to the, I mean, well, the draft will be over, but I think if you get to the trade deadline and, you know, they need to move him. I think right now, if you're Indiana and if your goal is to eventually move him down the road, is that you're kind of sitting in a holding pattern. You're waiting just for the best offer. And I don't think the 17th and the 33rd pick is the best offer. Where on the other end, I don't think the Timberwolves should trade number one for Victor Oladipo. I mean, as you mentioned, like, I'm not convinced that Victor can return to that form we saw pre-injury. I'm just not, and that is a big, that's a big ask as far as what you're going to have to, you know, potentially give up for that.
Outside of that pick, what do you see as the most attractive tradable contract on this team right now, too? So, if you are a GM and you're scanning through rosters and salaries, what do you see, Bobby, as the most attractive tradable contract that the Wolves have?
Well, I think there's a couple. I mean, I think if we take Carl and D'Angelo off the board,
right.
you've got the expiring of James' contract, and he'll pick up that player option. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, he probably already filed the paperwork. I mean, for that thing, so that will be exercised. And then you've got your younger kids. You know, you've got your former lottery picks. With Okoji and who fell outside the lottery, but and Culver, right? Like those young value, as I mentioned earlier with like the Tyler Heroes, those guys on those rookie scale contracts just have a lot of value because if they're really good players and they develop for you, the likelihood is that you have them for 7 or 8 years, you know, the 4 years of the rookie, and then you have them as a restricted free agent. So those are the type of things that would really have value, outside of your two main guys there.
Yeah. How likely is it that Ben Simmons gets traded this offseason?
I don't know. I don't think it's likely. I think especially if I'm Doc Rivers, who's taken over, I want to see if I can make that work. You know, I don't think you can move Ben or Embiid there. And I would, if I was Philadelphia, if you told me, hey, you can only keep one, for me, it would be keeping Simmons. I wouldn't keep, I would split, you know, I'm more of a Simmons guy than I am probably more of an Embiid guy. So I don't think likely in the offseason. I think you're kind of in a wait and see mode. Both those guys, I mean, Joel's got 3 years left and Ben's just starting that rookie extension. So he's got five. So I think if you're Doc Rivers, you're going to want to wait and see what you have with that roster. And then if you get somewhere during the season or even next offseason, you say like, this is not going to work. We're going to have to make a decision as far as, you know, where this goes. I think that's probably where Philadelphia would look.
Off that point, give me one move that you think has a chance of happening that would actually surprise fans but wouldn't shock you.
Yeah, I mean, I have an article coming out on Thursday, and it's kind of like it started as the 10 big questions heading into the offseason. I added an 11th question. I think what probably wouldn't shock people, but they have never really gone through this process is that my one team to watch is San Antonio, right? Like San Antonio is a fascinating story because they missed the playoffs this year. They played really well in Orlando with all those young kids. I mean, they put like DeRozan at the four, and they basically just said like Deontay Murray, Derek White, Keldon Johnson, let's see what we have here. And there is a foundation here, and they're at a crossroads with DeRozan's going to probably opt in. That's a big number to go out in free agency. He's going to opt in. You've got LaMarcus Aldridge on an expiring. You've got Patty Mills on an expiring. You've got Rudy Gay on an expiring. All right. So what are you going to do with those four kind of, you know, at once core pieces here? So, but they've never really been in the market where they're just going to break it up. They've always tried to kind of stay in the game here. And are they a team that's going to kind of hit that retool button to look to see what they can get value for? So that was my one, my big team, I guess, to kind of keep an eye on.
Yeah. So you, in your article that we're referencing here, just off the top of this discussion, where you lay out all the assets, you do have Bradley Beal on the off the table section in Washington. So your colleague at ESPN, Jay Williams, is a regular, he's a weekly guest on our show, yep. and he's known Karl-Anthony Towns for a long time. And so we were kind of playing this game, like, yeah, who are the third, but the potential guys that are established that could be the third star? And we got to Bradley Beal, and he was like, oh my God, if that would happen, like if you could have Bradley Beal and D'Angelo Russell and they could play any semblance of defense and shoot lights out, and you'd have Karl-Anthony Towns, he was just salivating over that potential. And I personally think like Bradley Beal at some point is in line for just a change of scenery, but you have him in the off limits category. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, I probably should have put an asterisk next to his name. I think he's different off limits compared to Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard. Like those guys are not going anywhere, right? Anthony Davis, you could say that too. Like they're not, like if you wouldn't even call Sean Marks in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah.
Like that's like the insult call. Like where Bradley, he's off limits, I would say, for now. Right. I think for right now, where Washington is, where John Wall coming back healthy, he should be off limits until we see how those two work together, how John Wall is healthy. Now, if you ask me in January, on January 18th, let's say if the season starts and we get going here and it's like, what do you think of Bradley Beal? I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, he's probably like, you know, I don't know if it can work with John Wall. Then that's a different – that's a different conversation. But I think for right now, he's off the table. That doesn't mean 2 months from now or 3 months from now, we get the season started and the Wizards start 2-10. And he's like, I mean, what are we doing here? Like, well, I'm not going through this again. Now that's a different conversation. But he's a guy, like, as I said earlier, like, you know, it'd be an insult to call, you know, Rob Pelinka and say, hey, got any interest in moving LeBron?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not doing that, right? Like,
shoot your shot, man. Gerson Rosas, if you're watching, if you're listening, shoot your shot, Gerson. Come on.
But it's not an insult if Gerson picked up the phone and called Tommy Shepard, their GM, and say, like, what do you think about Bradley? Are you going to be doing it? You know, and Tommy would probably say, you know what? Not right now. Maybe down the road, let's maybe revisit it. I probably should have maybe massaged that a little better and maybe put an asterisk next to it. But for now, I think I would certainly think Bradley's probably off the table.
Hey, what do you think the current perception of playing here with where the Wolves are at currently, Bobby, is? It's been a franchise that's, you know, been through so much, and I'm sure at times guys have said, I wouldn't go and play for the Wolves if you paid me X. But with the direction that they're going and what Gerson is doing, what do you think the perception of this team is right now?
Well, I mean, I think the perception is that they've got a great front office. I've known Gerson forever, when he was in Houston. I've known Joe Branch forever when he was an agent, Rock Nation. And I've known Sachin for a long time, especially when he was in Philadelphia and we did a lot of deals. And they have, and it's hard when you walk into that and you're basically going to try. I mean, Gerson has turned that roster over. I mean, like, there's like, I mean, Carl is like really the only guy I think left. And in the Western Conference, too, to be able to do this, this is not the East. This is a hard feat. So it is a player-friendly, family-friendly organization. That is the start. It is an organization that they will spend if they need. You have a coach in Ryan, I think, is a player-friendly coach here. But the hard part is, like, now you got to get some of these guys, right? Now you got to – I think there's a foundation in place. It's like, you know, D'Angelo is the roof and Carl is the foundation. Now, like, all right, what are we going to do with the walls and the second floor, right? Like, how do we keep on and going? And are they in worse shape than some other teams in the past? No, I think they're probably ahead of the game compared to teams like Detroit and Charlotte, you know, some of the teams that were in the lottery here. I think as long as they have a plan in place and they're not going to deviate off it, like in Brooklyn, we deviated off the plan, you know, as far as building with young players and going that route. And then you kind of just go from step two to step nine. Yeah, you get a little bit of a taste of success and then you're back to step one. You know, like, I think that's the ultimate goal for them. But yeah, I mean, I think compared to where they were, maybe, you know, I know Tibbs did really good things in that 1 year, but I think there's a strong foundation here where you know that Gerson's not going anywhere. You know, Ryan's not going anywhere. And we'll see what happens with this ownership change. Even if there's with the change of ownership, it's hard for me to believe that someone would come in and be like, you know what, I'm going to wipe the slate clean and I want to bring in my own front office. And I think what gives Gerson an advantage that he went through it in Houston, you know, when he went with it, when Fertitta took over. I mean, he's kind of gone through that where he can walk that new – whoever that new owner is going to be kind of through this process.
Last thing for you.
Reckless speculation.
So I don't even know where this originated from. I don't know if it was just like Wolves bloggers speculating on different things, but let's just say you got the Hawks picking at 6. Yep. And let's say the Timberwolves look at, you know, the,
I know where you're going here.
Yep. This is,
I know where you're going.
This is a fun angle. And the Wolves look at the top of the draft and they're like, all right, we like these players, but there's not like a, you know, there's not like a franchise changing player. There's a bunch of good players. So we're comfortable picking 6th if the Hawks want to trade up to 1, but we need something to go along with that. And John Collins is a restricted free agent after next year in Atlanta, and they have other pieces. But John Collins specifically piques my interest because he's a 20-10 power forward who shoots threes. That type of a deal, how realistic is it and how much of a player could Atlanta be and how good is John Collins?
I would do that. I mean, shoot, I might even just give him 1 and give me John Collins and he can keep 6.
Wow. But you'd have to get a you'd probably have to match any sort of restricted free agent contract.
You'd have to get something probably else back. But I think he's a heck of a player. I really do. I mean, that's kind of, and then, you know, that's different than a guy on an expiring because he's restricted and you have the right to match and you can get a deal done. And I think it'll be interesting what Atlanta does with him from an extension base, because his cap hold is so low because of where he was picked, and they can hold off and then preserve flexibility for 2021. And how does he work with Capella, right? Like, there's a lot of different dynamics to that here. But yeah, that's the type of thinking that you probably have to go into if you're looking for that third guy, would be, you know, taking one, flipping it for six. What else can you, you know, probably something else from Minnesota comes back. But yeah, I mean, that's front office thinking right there.
Look at that.
So that's not reckless. That's not reckless.
Speculation.
And by the way, it is not my genius. It's like the Wolves blogosphere that I'm stealing here. So just to deflect credit, but Bobby Marks, we appreciate you coming on, man. I'm sure we'll probably hit you up in like a month. We don't know when free agency officially starts yet. We know the draft is in a month from now. And so we'd love to talk again in a month as we know more about what could happen here in mid-November.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Awesome, man. Bobby Marks, ESPN insider, front office insider for their NBA coverage. And like that's the type of thing. Like, John Collins is not a household name, but if they don't think there's a franchise-changing player at the top, if they think that all these guys are like, they're really good players, but there's not a LeBron or a Kevin Durant or another Karl Anthony Towns, then could you get an established player, still have a pick in the top six by swapping, and now you've bolstered your roster even more? Or could you trade your, is it the 17th overall pick? There's the other first round pick. Yeah, like, could you trade that for an established player and draft number one overall? There's a lot of different paths here. And of course, the cynics would say, yeah, a lot of different ways for them to screw it up again. Like they always do. But this is a smart front office.
I can't blame them. The cynics you cannot blame at this point in time.
That was like 20 minutes of just straight reckless speculation right there. Just inject it right into us. Before we get to write that down predictions, let's touch on something.
In the air, center field. Kiermaier drifting back.
The Tampa Bay Rays, gentlemen, took a 3-0 lead in the American League Championship Series last night over the Astros. Jose Altuve has the throwing yips, which you
the
really...
The knoblock, the Stevie Sacks.
Man, you hate really to see bad. It. It's just tough to watch. The Astros
this is
just
a big
can't
deal,
catch
you guys.
A break.
Career-altering.
Really like, feel bad
like,
for him.
Like, once you just get awful. Like once you get this, it doesn't just come back. It's not a slump.
Boy, I would feel even worse if, if Bregman got the yips too,
oh,
man.
Oh, darn it, yeah. I don't know, maybe... maybe I saw it coming. I don't know.
Bregman loves himself some Bregman.
Yes, he does.
That's
he does.
My favorite thing. Yeah. That guy has no conscience whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah, he. I think he probably just has four walls of mirrors in every room in his house. Mm-hmm. Just Bregman at every
And the
turn.
Most the important one plan. Is the like one it. Above him.
Yeah.
Or more appropriately, above his bed. That's a guy who definitely watches himself in action all the time.
Oh, dude.
Oh,
one step too far.
Yeah, that's a guy. I'm just telling you. That's him. Far. You can tell.
So, all right. I think we were all segue. Texting last night and just sort of lamenting the fact that the Twins have lost, and it's crazy to say out loud again, 18 straight playoff games, and yet the low-budget Tampa Bay Rays, and the Twins are like middle budget. The Twins are not Yankees budget, but they're not Rays budget either.
And the Yankees are gone.
And the Yankees are out. The Dodgers might be out, to the other high-budget team. So, what... And the, you know, and it's not like the Rays have all of this postseason success, but they did go to World Series 10 years ago. They've at least like won games in series against big market teams, and now they're about to go back to the World Series for the second time in 12 years. So, like, why are the Rays able to do this and the Twins can't even win a damn game in October?
So, who are the 2020 Tampa Bay Rays? Because I can tell you exactly who they are, and I can tell you the 2019/20 Twins are not built like this, but who do the Rays remind you of almost exactly in so many ways, Phil Mackey?
Like another baseball team?
Yes. A recent, very successful, smaller budget baseball team.
Can I answer?
Yeah.
The Royals?
Yeah.
Yeah, Royals.
It's very much the same thing. What are they sound at? All of the key fundamentals. Their fielding last night. Their fielding last night was off the charts. The bullpen, for the most part, comes in and gasses guys. They remind me so much of that back-to-back KC, those KC teams.
That's a good one.
But that's what they are.
And that lineup in KC, just like the lineup with Tampa, you look at it on paper and you're like, I don't know about that.
Everything around it supplemented so well.
That's a great comparison. Yeah, but then you dig a little bit deeper into that. Okay, well, they have great defense, they've got a great bullpen, and a lineup that's kind of good enough, but they're just really fundamentally sound. This is the thing that's hard to wrap your head around, though. The Twins have actually become, in the last couple years, very good at most of those things, too, until they get to the postseason. So you want to compare like the Rays and the Twins. I'm just saying the last couple of years, since Derek and Thad really got their paws on this roster and this organization.
Yep.
You look at what are the Rays good at? Well, the Rays are good at all the things you just mentioned. I would also argue the Rays are great at just nailing every trade and maximizing draft picks and development. And you mentioned defense, especially outfield defense for the Rays and Kiermaier running around. Well, the Twins have been able to do a lot of the similar things. They've been able to turn random guy pitchers or average pitcher. Like Kenta Maeda was a good pitcher in Los Angeles. He's a Cy Young candidate in Minnesota. Tyler Duffy was
He was good in the playoffs, though.
He was good in the playoffs. That's true.
That wasn't Kenta.
One of like the three Maeda's guys fault. That played well. Tyler Duffy, Taylor Rogers before this season anyways, like Matt Whistler. These are just sort of random guys that the Twins turned into great relievers. Defensively, you could even argue the Twins are better in certain areas than the Rays are the last 2 years, especially now that Donaldson was playing third base. Helps to have him healthy.
Yeah.
Buxton. And I think the biggest difference overall is the Rays, all of the things that the Rays are good at, and it's a little bit of a different Venn diagram compared to the Twins.
Mm-hmm.
They take those things and they at least maintain their performance that they had in the regular season, carried over into postseason,
mm-hmm.
or elevate it. The Twins take the things that they're good at in the regular season the last couple of years and completely urinate themselves.
Yep.
Like they're incapable of at least maintaining the same level of things that they were good at up until October.
Mm-hmm.
They shrink. The Twins shrink and the Rays have not.
All right, for the second consecutive day now I'm going to take you to a place that gets a little bit uncomfortable because it's the nebulous world of, I don't know, but I think, all right? Yesterday it was Justin Jefferson is a star playmaker who deserves to have his hands on the ball as much as possible because the Vikings have some very good players, but he's a star. Big difference to me, okay?
Yeah.
But it's sort of like, well, no, Thielen's good, right? Right, Judd? Well, no, he's good. Justin Jefferson's better. All right. So today's world
You got hammered on YouTube for your Thielen.
So today's world, yes, and I knew I would, and that's okay, because Sports Dad has to come in and pave the way for the reality of the takes. So here's the, here is the Twins problem, because the Twins, I'm with you guys. I mean, the Twins are good. The Twins got a lot of key parts. The Twins have smart people in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is not a, what are Derek and Thad doing? And the oversight is just inexcusable. So here it is, in my opinion. Think about how the Twins operate in the regular season. And think about the overall, what comes down to really a lack of accountability so often. Rocco's really good. But where do the Twins struggle? When the pressure gets on, they don't know how to handle it.
They don't make love to pressure.
They don't know. In fact,
with a mirror above their bed, like Alex Bregman.
Exactly. In fact, they throw up. So I really think that we are probably like, we could certainly break down things and defensively and go through that. But I really think what we're talking about here too is a certain place that the Twins get to where it doesn't click, and it does for the Rays. And I do believe that part of that is the lack of accountability in season that you see where Rosario didn't know the ground rule. Well, I didn't know it either. That's just too bad. Instead of, no. If that's October, we need to know that rule. And we need, so it's that area that gets a little bit difficult to discuss because it's not just black and white about why the Twins seem to puke on their shoes when they get to the most important games. And the Rays seem to embrace it and absolutely thrive. And my guess is that just from day one in Tampa, there is an accountability factor. And I'm not saying that Cash is some maniac yelling and screaming and turning over the spread table, but I think that there's probably an accountability factor there that the Twins lack. And it's why sometimes when Rocco's just like, oh, yeah, that's a mistake. Yeah, it's too bad or something. You're like, no, I actually think that's a big deal.
Yeah, and I, yeah, some of that's, you're right. Like, some of it's hard to say, is that the reason why?
It's hard to quantify it completely.
But it does feel like the Twins don't really lean into the pressure in the moment. It feels like the pressure in the moment swallow up most of the Twins. I don't think it swallowed up Nelson Cruz. It certainly didn't swallow up Kenta Maeda, or to his credit, Jose Berríos.
It did not.
And that's kind of a shocker, because Berríos sort of represents, like, the moment is here. Go do it, but it and got he the just melts, right?
But it got the manager, who insisted on acting like this was game 58.
And it got Cody Stashek, because...
Well, yeah, and you know Stashek, what? It should get Cody Stashek.
And he's a good pitcher in the regular season, but I think... And this is where we get into the unquantifiable. It's impossible to measure, to what you said. You watch these Rays, and you watch some of the other teams. Like, the Braves have a badass lineup, and they've got Max Fried at the top of their rotation, but they're just like... They don't care that they're facing the Dodgers. They go into that game or that series against the Dodgers, and they're thinking, we are better than the Dodgers, and we are going to show it to you.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the Twins had that kind of swag, especially after the Bomba Squad broke the home run record last year, and they sort of act like they have that swag because Rosario, and like they on the surface, it looks like they've got that swag. But when they get punched in the mouth early, or they leave the bases loaded in the first inning or something, instead of saying, all right, let's get back on the horse, let's do it again, they sort of stumble when they get punched in the postseason. They don't have the actual lean into the spotlight that some of these teams, and the Rays I would put in that group. So that's what it feels like to me.
So there is a big difference between intensity and tightness. Like, the Braves have a cocky intensity that... And the Rays do too, that you admire, but they're not tight. They're intense. And that's a really fine line. But the teams that carry that playoff swagger intensity often don't care. And teams that get tight do care because, oh my God, can we beat this team? We've lost 17 consecutive games. And that to backtrack too, that's where the entire conversation comes into play about the losing streak,
yes,
does mean something.
And to say that, well, none of that stuff that's happened before this year matters, it doesn't. You're telling me that it's just a pure coincidence that they've lost 18 straight postseason games, and it's been also 14 straight postseason games since they've scored an actual meaningful amount of runs. They haven't scored more than 4 runs in a postseason game. So an entire lineup just coincidentally wilts. It's just sort of a random occurrence, small samples. I'm a stat guy. I'm an analytics guy.
Right.
And I love it. Like, well, it's kind of a small sample size. Like, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that. And I would actually feel differently if they had been swept by the Astros and in the second game they lost 11-9 and they just went down swinging. And like, they got deep into their bullpen and the Astros just rocked their bullpen. My narrative would be different. I would be saying, all right, well, at least they came to fight. But they just need a couple better middle relievers or something.
Right, but the Twins lost. I think the Twins lost the series in game two in one place in particular, and it all goes to one guy, Rocco. When he took Berríos out, everyone, including Berríos, looked at him like, what are you doing? Like, where's the confidence here? This guy is throwing the game of his life. I don't care if he throws 115 pitches. Yeah. With the way that he, for an uptight team, to have a moment where you break through that wall and all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, Rocco believes in Berríos. This is great. Instead and saying, you know what? It's been a great day, but heck, it's July 20th, right? No, Rocco, it's October.
Yeah.
That to me is a very important place where you had an opportunity to make a mark and break through that wall. And instead you retreated in the direction of no, not today.
You know what we need for analytics people? Again, coming from an analytics guy, for analytical managers, like, you're managing based on third time through the order stats, you know, over the course of a season. It's like, we need a break glass in case of emergency during analytics decisions like that.
I love it.
Where, yes, 9 times out of 10, this is the right decision to make. But 1 time out of 10, you have to lean on your gut, your intuition, and your eyes and what you're seeing. And so I agree with you.
And the tough thing there is often that 1 out of 10 times comes at the most difficult spot.
Yeah. So, all right, well, there's more things I'm sure that we're going to learn from the Rays and the Braves or the Dodgers. But actually, if the Braves and Rays play in the World Series, that will be a masterclass learning things for the Twins.
And no one will watch.
Because those aren't like $200 million payrolls and nobody will watch.
And yeah. A rating of 0.0002.
Woof. Yeah, it's gonna be pretty rough. All right, let's come back here and let's make some predictions and hold each other accountable.
Write this down. Write it down. You like writing things down.
A quick shout out to our YouTube pages, both Score North YouTube and Purple Daily YouTube. Go to youtube.com/ScoreNorthMN for a lot of Mackie and Judd non-Viking stuff and some Viking stuff, and also our 10,000 subscriber now YouTube channel for Purple Daily, youtube.com/PurpleDailyPodcast.
Most sports talking heads make predictions, then hope you forget about how wrong they were. But not Mackie and Judd with Rami. This is the Big Leagues, where we own our terrible predictions.
Write this down.
And keep track of each other's batting averages.
Write it down. You like writing things down.
It's Write That Down with Mackie, Judd, and Rami.
Write that down. I don't have a pencil.
Well, remember that down. Write that down.
By the way, our guy Rami... We're keeping him in the intro of this, number one, because we're short-staffed and just
production
haven't changed it yet.
Yeah,
but also because he's still flirting. He still has a chance to win the batting title. And also, he is getting his dream job fill-in opportunity this week on the Score in Chicago, the Score 670. That was my prediction from last week. He had told us, and now so yesterday was his first day in the afternoons with Danny Parkins. And that's an open job. So if he does really well, if he kills it, if he breaks a leg... Like they say in show business, he could wind up with.
Hope
that
he knows his White Sox baseball.
See, yeah, they talked a lot of White
Sox. That's the big talker these days. Tony La Russa,
blind date.
Oh my
God!
There's no way Tony La Russa
to come back and manage, according to Bob Nightingale of USA Today.
There's no way that happens, right? He's like 75, and as old school crusty as they.
It reads legit.
Oh my God!
Don't write this down.
Anyways,
write it down. You like writing things down?
Well, we've got. So here's how it works: 3 predictions from everybody every single week. We are the only sports talk show in America that actually keeps track of our predictions with batting averages and home runs. The predictions must be quantifiable, and we bring listeners into the prediction segment with us every single week. We've got Frank from Italy, and we've got Dustin, and we're going to give those guys a chance to take some swings. If you want to be part of Write That Down, we do have some openings. So we booked everything out through like October earlier on this year. And so we have some openings in November and December and beyond. You can DM me at Phil Mackey. Even if I don't follow you on Twitter, you can send me a DM if you want to be part of the segment or if you just want to rip me, whatever. My DMs are open.
Yep,
I'm open to either one. Teflon.
Write that down.
All right, let's get to the wreckage. Judd Zolgad came in with a pretty solid batting average lead. A lot of red here, Judd.
3?
A lot of red, and they're unfortunately for you, is not a page 2 of green to bail you out. You had Josh Donaldson. We're going to clean up some of these Twins. Like, there's some MVP ones in here we're going to clean up this week. So Josh Donaldson winning the
That must have been a home
MVP.
Run, I hope.
Yeah, it was. I think it was.
I don't think it was a forced home run. I think it was just a home run.
All right.
This one was a forced home run. You said I-94 eastbound will be shut down this fall for an afternoon for the Twins victory parade. The hilarious part about this is even if the Twins would have won the World Series, you probably would have gotten screwed on this because of COVID. So that was wrong.
It would have been a virtual victory parade.
Yep.
Shutting down I-94.
And you said Manny Hill will predict at least 2 other teams in addition to the Clippers will win the title. He did predict the Lakers, but he never pulled the trigger on the next one.
Oh. Man, give him more time. He would have done
it. I know. So you went 0 for 3.
3 wrong? Oh, I can handle an 0 for 3.
Jonathan Harrison, last year's reigning defending batting champion, had nothing come off the board.
Okay.
Manny Hill said Josh Donaldson will win the American League MVP and a gold glove. And that the Lakers would win the NBA championship
in
6 games or less, but as part of a parlay.
Manny.
Part of a parlay that said Anthony Davis will be the finals MVP.
God, that stinks.
That's terrible.
Just go with the one. I mean, come on.
Dang. Rami Makhlouf, nothing off the board.
Ugh.
Phil Mackey, a little green. A little green for
I'm glad.
Mackinac.
You know what? I'm glad to see you get some green this week.
It's been a rough one, yeah. I did tell you guys that Byron Buxton would win the American League MVP award. However, I knocked some dirt off my cleats. I grabbed a hefty bat. And I told you long ago that the Lakers would, this is like over a year ago.
Oh, this is good.
That the Lakers would trade for Anthony Davis. They would win 50 games again, which even in a pandemic shortened season, they still won 52 games. And they would win the NBA title.
That's a lot. That's a
circle the bases, baby. Yeah.
That's a Sano-like home run. What?
Gotta give someone else. Maybe not a Sano like home run.
Oh, he hits no.
Dude, that's a bomb.
That's a bomb.
That's a three item parlay.
I'm not denying a bomb.
If he connects, that's a long home run.
I feel like Sano. Thank you.
Good job. That's a nice.
Thank you.
That is third deck target field.
Giancarlo.
That's probably my longest home run. Third home run.
It's really, it's a very, very solid. Yeah.
And then I also went with the fortification of that first prediction. At one point I said the NBA season will pick up again. So parlay. And the Lakers will win the championship. At the point of this prediction, the Lakers were like firmly in the mix to win the titles. It's not another home run.
It's a knock. Yeah.
It's a nice little knock.
Good for you.
So back on the rise there. All right. Listeners had three things come off the board. They said, Matt said the Minnesota Twins will win the World Series and Judd will change his mind on the tainted title.
Respect it.
Never got to find out.
If the Rays win the championship, will it be tainted?
Yeah, it's not a real title.
So stupid.
It's a 60-game season followed by a truncated playoff in a bubble. It can't be considered normal.
Truncated playoff? Expanded playoff? They had to go through more high-salary teams.
Your off days.
Changed playoff. It's a really nice accomplishment. Congratulations if they do.
Bob said if Major League Baseball finishes, the Twins will win a postseason series.
Poor Bob.
And Sam thought the Vikings-Seahawks game would be high scoring. It was fairly high scoring.
Oh, boy.
Well, he all did.
He said no matchup in week 5 in the NFL will result in more points than Seahawks-Vikings. Well, I know that Oakland and Kansas City was like 72 or 73.
I think that was the highest scoring game of the weekend.
So, and there's like 20 more points in the Vikings game. And Declan Goff, a little bit of a bloodbath for you this week. You said Justin Jefferson will have a touchdown and a catch of 20-plus yards. He had neither of those things.
Oh, this one really hurt, the second one.
You said the Vikings there will be at least 55 points scored between the Seahawks and the Vikings. It was 52?
Mm-hmm. It was very close. Maybe they should have kicked the field goal.
Wow.
Fire Zim.
And then you said Max Kepler and Josh Donaldson would each finish top 10 in American League MVP. That hasn't happened yet, but there's no way that happens.
They got the board.
And that brings us to the updated batting averages here.
Okay.
Judd Zolgad still above 400, 411. That average was closer to 500 about a month back, but you're still hanging on.
Last week was dicey because it was awful and then it was okay.
Yeah, you pretty much, I think you only lost a point off your batting average last week.
Yeah, that was a weird week.
You had like 15 things come off the board. So you have a 411 average and 3 home runs. Rami Makhlouf, 393 with 1 home run. Declan down to 344 with 1 home run. I'm at 285 with 3 home runs, tied with Judd for the home run lead. Listeners at 208 with 2 home runs. John Harrison, 176 with 2 home runs. And Manny Hill at the bottom with a 167 average and 1 home run.
Write it down. You like writing things down.
I'll punch up Frank here. Frank in Italy. Are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Awesome. Look at this. We are an international phenomenon here on Mackie and Judd.
First time across the pond for us?
I think so.
I don't think we've done it.
I feel like we... Oh, that's a good question. I take that. On Ventline, we've had people from different parts of the country.
But not on, not on the show.
And then Dustin.
I got him.
Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
All right, we got Dustin, we got Frank. So here's how this is going to work. We're going to go Frank, Dustin, Judd, Declan, Phil. We're going to go around three times, and you're going to take your swings. So Frank, since you're the leadoff hitter, what's your plan? Are you swinging for the fences? Are you looking to get hit by a pitch? Are you going to just try to get on base? What's your strategy today?
I'm going to try to do a little bit of both, guys. A little bit of a couple of singles, and then I'm going to take a big swing. A
little Ricky Henderson action coming up here. little Johnny Damon, little power. All right, Frank in Italy.
Write this down. Write it down. You like writing things down.
Fire away.
All right. All right, guys. My predictions will be Viking-centric because I'm a big Vikings fan.
Okay.
So my first prediction is that the next Vikings starting quarterback, and I'm talking about the guy that will at some point hopefully soon inherit the QB1 position on the depth chart from Kirk Cousins, will be on our roster, either because he'll be drafted, traded for, or signed as a free agent by the kickoff of week one next season.
So it's, you're saying by kickoff next season, there will essentially be a new starting quarterback, right?
He'll be on our roster. Perhaps Cousins will still be QB1, but as soon as he's not our QB1 anymore, the next one will already be on our roster.
Got you. Like Jake Browning or something. Season. Or Nate Stanley or something.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay.
Exactly.
Boy, that fans would love that. Let's just turn over to Jake Browning. Now, if they were to draft a quarterback and still start like Stanley or something, this prediction would count. Because he's just saying the starting quarterback.
Right, on the roster.
All right.
Write it down. Absolutely. You like writing things down.
All right, Dustin, what's your strategy here?
I'm going Gopher-centric with one Vikings pick. And hoping to see these realized within the next 6 months to a year.
All right. That's fair enough. All right. Fire away with your first one.
So I have to take Judd's advice and make sure I word this appropriately. So I don't do myself here. So the Gopher football team will win all the trophy games they play this year. Now the games they actually play, and I'm going to define trophy games that are games that include the Jug, Floyd, and the Axe.
Yep.
What about the national title game?
Don't take the bait, Dustin. Don't take the bait. He's trying to bait you.
Because if they win all of those trophy games, I have a feeling they might be in line to play for more trophies.
I would say this is a home run if this hits.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, all three of them.
Absolutely. I love this prediction.
Write it down. You like writing things down.
All right, Judd Zulgad.
All right, looking forward to next twin season. Jorge Alcala will lead the Twins in saves in 2021.
Oh, my guy. My guy.
Jorge Alcala, the flame-throwing, hard-throwing Jorge Alcala will lead the Twins in saves in 2021.
What does it say, though, that they didn't put him on the postseason roster? Sort of baffling to me.
Yeah, I didn't get that one.
It clearly sent some kind of a message, unless he had an injury that we just didn't know about.
I don't know about the playoffs, okay? That's the past. I'm looking towards the future.
All right.
Like all good sports executives, I'm looking towards the future.
Right.
All right, Bill. All right, Declan Goff.
All right, the Falcons will beat the Vikings on Sunday. The Falcons will beat the Vikings on Sunday. I need a hit, and I think the Falcons are going to come in motivated. The Falcons will beat the Vikings on Sunday. It's going very simple.
It's come to this, huh, Declan?
Are the Vikings motivated?
Maybe. They have a better offense. I can just see the Vikings just going to a tailspin of the bye week, so... Falcons will beat the...
I'm trying to decide if the Vikings still think, because they've at least had some close shaves against good teams and their offense is moving the ball, if the Vikings believe that they can turn this around, or if they've gotten to the point where it's like, yeah, this isn't working.
I don't think they're quitting yet. Yeah.
I don't think so either.
I don't think so. Not yet.
Okay.
Write it down. You like writing things down.
All right. I'm gonna predict a Justin Jefferson bounce back here. This is...
Careful.
Well, after hitting a home run here this week, I'm just trying to get on the board. I need to raise my batting average to catch Judd. So Justin Jefferson was only targeted 5 times inexplicably in that game against Seattle secondary. So I will say Justin Jefferson will bounce back in the target category, and he will be targeted at least 8 times against the Falcons. So they'll at least make a concerted effort to throw him the ball.
Write this down.
Write that down.
All right, back to Frank in Italy. Your second prediction.
All right. I'm going to say that Dalvin Cook, this is a parlay, okay?
Okay.
Dalvin Cook is going to miss, he's going to miss at least 2 more games this season, one being the Atlanta game and one being some other game down the line. And on the occasion of this second game being that he's going to miss, Judd is going to complain about the price tag on Dalvin Cook's contract.
Oh, that part's a hit for sure. That part's a hit. There is no, I can tell you right now, that's going to happen.
It's already half true.
Yeah.
Well, so Judd complained yesterday about the contract.
And I wrote about it.
But so now he has to complain again from this point forward. He has to complain
again.
But
I will. He's got that part of the hit.
He will. That's a great hit.
Write this down.
I love it. Frank just tapping into our tendencies.
It's already 2-0 on the count for Frank, and he just comes up and is looking for the fastball. He already knows exactly what's going on.
The pitcher's tipping his pitches. Yes. Like, Frank's just sitting in there in the batter's
banging
box.
Banging on a trash can. Yeah. Hey, Frank, here's what's got curveball!
All right, back over to Dustin.
All right, prediction number 2 on the Gophers here. At least one of Tanner Morgan or Rashad Bateman will be a top five Heisman candidate, at least one of them.
Ooh.
Interesting.
I like it.
I think that's also a home run.
Could they both, if they both have big years, could they both be first round draft picks? Because Tanner Morgan's kind of getting that like second tier quarterback steam.
Yeah.
But people need to see more.
I don't think he's going to be a first round draft pick.
If he has a big year.
Yeah, but he's going to have a big year because Bateman's that good. And I think the scouts are going to.
Okay.
I'm just telling you this is how football people think. Okay. I mean, I know people don't like it. Sure, I'm going to get ripped on YouTube and Twitter.
Get
upset with me.
Write this down.
All right. Back to Judd, his second prediction.
I also had a Dalvin Cook games missed prediction, but in light of the previous prediction, I feel it falls woefully short, and so I have retooled here. Alexander Mattison will lead the Vikings in rushing this season.
Oh. Whoa! Whoa!
Alexander Mattison this is going season. To end up leading the Vikings in rushing this season. Yes, yes.
Oh, I love this.
Dalvin Cook
so
has
much.
Suffered a groin injury. Those don't like just magically disappear. If he tries to come back too quick, he's in trouble. If he doesn't come back, guess who gets the carries? Alex Mattison.
All right, here's where the race is at right now. Dalvin Cook, 489 yards rushing on the season. Alexander Mattison is about, he's 270 yards behind him with 219.
Yeah, I'm just going on games. I'm going on games played, time missed.
I think this is a home run. I think this is a home run.
It's a home run.
You call it what you want.
It's a home run.
I'm just calling it.
Okay.
Write this down. Write it down. You like writing things down.
All right, back to Declan.
All right, my second bunt single here. The Rays will sweep the Astros. They're up 3-0. They're going to sweep the Astros.
These aren't bunt singles, man. That's a
50-50. Yeah, I guess. The Rays, but that's tonight, right? Because there's no off days. So
correct.
This will be off the board by in about 12
hours. Did you guys see the look on Jose Altuve's face after? So he makes that his third throwing error in like 2 days. And then the run train just keeps going, right? And the bloop falls into right. And they kept showing Altuve, and he looked like he wanted to die.
Oh.
And so there's a chance the Astros, after being down 3-0 and all the stuff they've gone through this year.
He's got throwing disease.
Wah, wah.
That's really inside.
The old Gene Harrington, Trevor Plouffe, you got throwing disease.
Yeah, Gene Harrington, didn't he used to work? Wasn't he like the Packers head trainer under Vince Lombardi
or
something?
That's a great story. He was, yes.
And then Gene Harrington worked for the local media here.
For years.
And he would be oftentimes the first guy to ask questions in local press conferences and scrums. And Trevor Plouffe came up early, played some shortstop. He was a shortstop as he was drafted. And Trevor Plouffe had a problem sailing throws into like the third row of the target field seats. And eventually they just moved him to like third base and outfield and stuff. And I think first base. But he was just young, sort of depressed. He had made two throwing errors. And it was me, Gene Harrington, and one of the other Twins beat writers. And it's depressed Trevor Plouffe at his locker having blown this game. And Gene Harrington walks up and he's trying to like, you know, like make the situation light, right? It's a young kid. Hey, so, boy, looks like he got that throwing disease, huh? Man. As kind of a lighthearted way of like, no, it's just he got that throwing disease. And Trevor Plouffe looks at Gene Harrington and says, I don't have a bleeping disease, and just like walks out of the club.
I don't blame Trevor Plouffe, actually. I don't.
Rest his soul.
God bless
throwing
Gene.
Disease. Yeah.
Write it down. You like writing things down.
I don't blame him.
All right, it's back to me, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, write this down. Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, maybe the two greatest quarterbacks of our current generation, are squaring off this Sunday.
Okay.
They will combine for at least 6 touchdown passes in that game.
Okay.
I don't know if it's 5-1, 3-3, 4-2, but they will combine for at least 6 touchdown passes in their matchup.
Is that Sunday? Is that a primetime game? Is that Sunday night?
I don't really care when it is, Declan.
Okay. Good.
A lot of games getting postponed, and I'm not going to get baited into picking
a
day.
Yeah.
Okay. In their matchup, whenever they play, if they play in January, in their next matchup, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers will combine for at least 6 touchdown passes.
Write this down. Write it down. You like writing things down.
All right, back to Frank. It's scheduled to be a 3:00 afternoon Sunday game.
Okay.
Just in case you're wondering. Frank in Italy, your final prediction.
All right. My third prediction is age influenced, as I am approximately Judd's age. And I'd like to swing for a home run with a positive spin here, all right? So my third prediction is that by the time that the sports season starting in 2022 that involve the four usual suspects, so the Wild, the Vikings, the Wolves, and the Twins, are completed, one or more of these teams will have reached the final act of their respective sports. So the Super Bowl, the World Series, the Stanley Cup, or the NBA Finals. I'm not going to say that.
All right.
I love it. And you said in the next year?
by the time the 2022 seasons are completed, so I'm going to take two seasons for each team.
Got it. Okay. Or not, because of COVID. I don't know. But having an end date is helpful. I love it, man. Frank, you came to swing. Since you have this platform right now, is there anyone in your life you'd like to thank that got you to this point?
Yes, most definitely. Here in Italy, I'm the co-host of an All Vikings podcast. This is a podcast in Italian language. It's called Purple Valhalla.
Wow.
So my shout-out goes to my friend and co-host, Ale, as well as to all the Italian fans that follow our show. And second thing, really quickly, I really want to congratulate you guys for your shows. I'm an avid follower. I mostly follow you in podcast format because there's a huge time difference. There's like 7 hours from Minnesota to Italy. But I love the way that you keep things light and informal. And at the same time, I get all the information I need, you know, for the Minnesota sports teams that I follow. So keep them coming.
Thank you,
Frank. Thanks, man. Frank. And Purple Valhalla, if you speak Italian and like the Vikings, go check it out. Frank, thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Dustin, your final prediction. Let's do it.
All right. Because Rick Spielman and Mike Zimmer will refuse to accept the fate of the season and tank, they're going to pull, what was it, 2012, 2013, when they won that game they shouldn't have and missed out on Andrew Luck. They're going to do something similar where they're going to win one more game than they should or maybe two more games than they should, and they're going to end up picking between 5 and 14 in the next NFL draft.
All right.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think you're exactly right.
That's probably the goalpost for sure. So, all right, Dust, go ahead, man.
I said, is that a bunt single?
No. I mean, it's not a home run.
Like, it's a single.
They're tracking for somewhere in that range, yeah.
That's a definite single.
Still early in the season, though. There's different things that could happen. So, Dustin, since you have this platform now, is there anyone you'd like to thank in your life?
Yeah, I'm a native of Minnesota living in Chicago, so I want to thank you guys for providing me with my Minnesota sports content. I listen to a lot of your Score North podcasts. And I also want to thank the Chicago Bears for being even more inept with their quarterback development and their quarterback ability to pick and develop a quarterback. It provides me continuous amusement with all of my Chicago Bears fans and family members.
Yeah, I was listening yesterday to Rami's show with Danny Parkins on The Score, and one of their conversations was about whether Mitch Trubisky at some point can even be like a Ryan Tannehill. Like, can he go to another team? And so, you know, we sit here and complain about Kirk Cousins, and there's definitely things about Kirk Cousins that drive me bonkers, but as bad as the Vikings have had it for quarterbacks at times, whew, the Chicago Bears.
Yep. Definitely
a disaster. Dustin, thanks for being a guest predictor today, man. Good luck with your predictions.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
See ya.
All right, we'll say goodbye to our guest predictors, and we'll go back to Judd Zolgad here. Your final prediction.
All right, I'm going to keep it in the Vikings prediction cycle, and it's going to be for down the road.
Write that down.
Kirk Cousins will never win another playoff game with the Vikings. Kirk Cousins will never win a playoff game after he beat the Saints. They lost to the Niners. They might make it again at some point in time. They might not with him here, but he will never win another playoff game.
Just for, you know, legit, I don't know what the word is, just for like clarification. Are you saying his current run with the Vikings and like if he goes to another team, then the prediction comes off the board?
Correct.
Or
yeah, Kirk Cousins will never win.
What if he comes back in like 9 years as a 40-year-old Jeff George?
I say we bring it to an end at his current run. So if he comes back, we don't care.
Okay. So, I just don't want you to be calling like 8 years later, calling me and Declan and be like, hey, they re-signed Kirk Cousins and he came in as a backup.
Yeah, but then he might win. But then he'd win because there'd be no pressure and that would be bad for me. He will never win another playoff game with the Vikings.
That's true. I guess you wouldn't call
me. I don't want that. I wouldn't call you about that.
Write it down. You like writing things down.
All right, back to Declan, your final prediction.
Well, I have a bachelorette prediction for you here, Phil. I caught up on the season premiere yesterday.
Dude, how great was that season?
Oh, my God.
I love how Claire, who's 39 years old, she's 39 years old, she basically identified the guy that she wanted to pick on the first night.
Yeah. I didn't read any spoilers, but like I read up on The Ringer. They did their synopsis of it, and it's like pretty obvious what's going to happen with the way they're teasing stuff and whatnot. Like, you kind of know what's going to transpire on this season, even though they always
say Tayshia's music.
Yeah.
My God.
So, you know, this is going to be some craziness, but it has nothing to do with that because that has some spoilers in it. I will say, though, Easy, who was like my favorite contestant on the show last week. His name was Easy.
There's a guy named Easy on the show.
And I'm not going to try to pronounce his real name. There's zero chance I'm going to try to do that. However, my prediction is Easy will be on the next season of Bachelor in Paradise when it's announced.
Okay.
So Easy will be on a season of Bachelor in Paradise. Actually, I'm going to rephrase that. Easy will be on a season with on Bachelor in Paradise.
Okay. How about in the next 2 years or something?
Okay.
Just so we
that's
can
fine.
Put an end date on it.
Yep, that's fine.
Same thing. Like, I don't want Easy coming back when he's 40 years old in 10 years.
That would be a problem.
Oh, I got to leave that one on the board. God. And Larry Brown's still alive, and there's just too many things that could happen.
Larry Brown is alive and kicking right now.
Man, I'm going to withhold Bachelorette predictions for now. I like where you're going. I should definitely make a Bachelorette prediction at some point.
I didn't bring one up today. I'm shocked. In fact, I'll be honest, I almost pre-recorded one, and I was going to show Judd and say you were going to make one today, and then I held back on it.
Wow.
Wow.
I was going to do it, but I didn't want to come off the board so quickly, so I held off on it, and now I'm just admitting like what I was going through.
I want things that are come off the board this week, so I'm just going to say the Vikings will beat the Falcons with my final prediction.
Okay.
The Vikings will beat the
Falcons. Write it down. You like writing things down.
They will continue to screw up their tank for Trevor Hopes, and they will win this game. So those are your predictions.
Write this down.
Write that down.
Every single Wednesday on this show, Mackie and Judd, you can also find us on youtube.com/scorenorthmn if you want to see the video version of this and click subscribe. And if you want to be a guest predictor, just shoot me a DM on Twitter at Phil Mackie, and we'll get you scheduled sometime, hopefully in November or December. We've got a bunch of openings. So, all right, boys, good stuff.
Write this down.
Woo!
Patrick Royce, what's on your mind today?
How about those Rays, man? They get one little crack in the window, and they get five runs.
Did you see the look on Jose Altuve's face the rest of that inning every time they showed him?
Yes. All of a sudden, he's turned into Chuck Knobloch. What happened? Let's
throw some hot dogs at him.
He's got the Steve Sachs thing, yeah. The Knobloch Steve Sachs thing. No.
He had made, what'd they say, he had made a throwing error in like 3 years or some damn thing, and now he did. I think we're the first. One of them was ground ball, too, but two of them were throwing errors, right? Yesterday and the day before.
Yes. So
maybe they were. Yeah. Yeah, unbelievable. Maybe it's a short guy, second baseman affliction. I don't know what it is. But, and then they cannot get a hit, no matter how many times they load the bases. Some mutt comes in and gets them out. It's just incredible. Poor Dusty. Dusty's got the head hang going pretty good in the dugout, doesn't he? He thought, he's trying to win that last World Series at 71, and just ain't going to happen, Dusty.
Yeah. Did you see the news from Bob Nightingale that Tony La Russa is in the mix to be the White Sox new manager?
Somebody told me that, and that's got to be a bouquet that they're throwing to Reinsdorf, because crazy old Reinsdorf still wants to act like he's calling the shots. And they want to get either Hinch or Cora. I think that's who Rob Hahn wants. But I'm sure that it's kind of like when Carl Pohlad, when Andy McPhail had to convince Carl Pohlad not to hire Jim Fry and to let him promote Tom Kelly. And as a bouquet to Carl, they brought in Ralph Houk. Remember that? They brought in Ralph. Probably before your time. They brought in Ralph as a senior advisor, and what a lark that was for him. He was the as the major with the Yankees. He was the grumpiest guy that ever. He thought the Twins' job was the greatest. Kelly told me about the third day of meetings there. Houk says to him, "You got this all figured out. You don't need me. I'll be showing up later."
Did he really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
I used to stand next to him at BP down there at Tinker Field, and he would just, say stuff and laugh. And I've always told this story. There was a guy over in front of the visitor dugout, an old security guard, usher-type guy, who would steal baseballs during BP. If a ball came over by him, he'd kind of look all around and then slip it in his pocket to give it to grandkids or something. And then he had a little bag over in the dugout that he'd go put these baseballs in. So Houk noted this. So then Houk, one day I'm with him, and he's playing this game as to how far he can get the guy to come out on the field to steal the baseball. So he would start lobbing it over there, and it'd get to the get to the cutout, and the guy grabbed the ball. So then he'd throw it in the grass, and he had the guy damn near to home plate before, deal with the baseball. He thought it was the greatest thing of all time. That's what he was doing as a senior advisor.
That's got to be a decent salary for monitoring baseball stealing. That's not too bad.
Yes.
Jeez.
Well, but not only monitoring it, but encouraging it. You know, it was unbelievable. But this can't be serious. Hell, he just got fired from his last advisory job because he was, you know, offering nothing in his advanced age. So
I think I saw a first choice, Pat, though. I think Nightingale's last report or tweet that I saw said that he is their first choice, which is incredible.
Oh God. Why would you take a chance on that with this young club you got coming up? You want somebody who can relate to these guys, don't you?
I would think so. Yeah.
If I'm the Twins, I'm saying hire Tony La Russa.
Yeah, how's he going to decide if Robert, how's it going to work out if Robert decides not to run to first base someday and Tony decides to be a tough guy instead of saying, hey, next time run to first base?
Well, here's the other thing. I'm looking at a New York Post report. Well, the White Sox do know how to choose polarizing candidates. So Tony La Russa is one, and then A.J. Hinch is also one of the finalists or strong candidates.
But he would be a hell of a manager. He just would irritate some people that he was back in the game. But I think he's an arrogant guy, but I think he's sharp as hell. I'd like Cora better. If I was him, I'd take Cora. But Cora could relate, better probably to the Latin superstars that they have coming. But Tony La Russa would be my last choice. That's for sure. Yeah. You know who got along with him pretty good though, TK. Even though they had completely different personalities, and La Russa was always outselling himself. But I think Tom thought he was a really good manager back in the day. So
He was good back then. That's probably incredibly true. But now
is he 73 or 4 probably?
Yes. Yes.
Not too old to be a sports writer, but too old to be a baseball manager, I'd say. Bob McDonald died, the legendary basketball coach from Chisholm, won more games than anybody else, 87 years old, retired a few years ago. He coached until he was 80, 81, something like that. He was in a senior facility and got the COVID and up there in the range, and he died this morning at 87. He's got 6 kids. They all went into coaching. They all were like superstar players for him. Joel was the leading scorer in the state at one time.
Yep.
He's been the hitting coach for a long time. But the two girls, they were great players too. 4 boys, 2 girls. They came in all personalities too. Paulie, the oldest, one of the oldest boys, is one of the great characters of all time. I don't even drink, but I like to be around Paulie when he was drinking. He was funny, man. So anyway, I'm sure they're sad folks up there in Chisholm because he was just a legend of basketball up there.
Hey Pat, we I think we talked Whitey Ford with you last week, but Joe Morgan died a couple days ago too.
Oh yeah, that's terrible. He's best second baseman ever, I think. That was a trade when they traded a really good hitter. Lee May, a power-hitting first baseman, because they had Tony Perez. So they traded him to Houston, and Morgan was, coming over with ability, but not with fantastic stats. And Cincinnati was really smart back then, and they saw something. And I don't know, who would you rate as the best on the Big Red Machine? I would put him ahead of Patch, but not by much.
That's one of the teams I would love to have been able to go back and watch.
Yeah, it'd be what? It'd be him, Bench, Rose, Perez.
Yeah, they got 3 Hall of Famers, and Rose is one of them. You know,
yeah,
because he didn't get in. Davey Concepcion was a shortstop. Yep. Bench, Perez, second. Rose was I think third base originally. Morgan second base. Rose was third. Then they put him in the outfield later.
Mm-hmm.
Concepcion was a great shortstop. Corner outfielders were Griffey Sr. and then who's a really good right fielder? Who the hell? What am I missing? They have a terrific right fielder. Cesar Geronimo was a center fielder, great defensively, not a great hitter. And later on, Griffey Sr. was replaced by George Foster.
Yeah, not too bad.
No DH back then either. So, actually, there was a DH in our league, but not in their league. But they were unbelievable. I never covered them as such because there was a – I was covering the beat then, but we didn't – St. Paul didn't cover the World Series in the 70s, and there was no interleague games, and I might have seen them in spring training, but I think Cincinnati was still in Florida then. I might have seen them in spring training, but I never covered any of their games. So.
And Joe,
I did cover Rose when he set the hit record, and I was there 3 days, and he did 45 minutes before the game and 45 minutes after the game for 3 days and never told the same story twice.
Really?
It was the greatest interview of all time.
And he got the hit off of Eric Schau, right? Of the Padres?
I think so. A little blooping single left center, as I recall. But it was, he was... I don't know. Can we, as soon as we vote one of the steroid boys in, we should let Pete in, don't you think?
Probably.
Yeah.
I think it's probably time.
Why not?
And did Pete gamble on games as a player? I mean, I'm guessing he did, but that's been my thing. That's been my thing is he's not going in for his managerial attributes.
I don't know if he did or not, but we were much more worried about that stuff. It is kind of interesting that the baseball is now tied in. When you watch the baseball games now, who is their number one sponsor?
Gambling?
DraftKings.
Yeah, gamble. Yeah. Oh, yeah. DraftKings. Oh, we're not as concerned about that as Bart was, Patrick.
No, we aren't. Bart was a little more concerned about it back then. That's for sure.
Yep.
That's for sure. So what about those? You know, those Bravos are good boys.
Mm-hmm. They are. Well, that's one thing we wanted to ask you about is with the Braves and the Rays, what are the things that you would want the Minnesota Twins to go to school on when watching the Braves and the Rays so that they can win a postseason game at some point?
Wow. And there's nothing the Rays can offer because it's so unique that I don't know. You know, I think the Rays feed on everyone's overconfidence. I don't know what it is, but with the Braves, you know, get young guys that don't strike out 400 times and also play. But I really love the nucleus of that team. But how about these kid pitchers they got? Oof. They
yes,
you know, freed, and I mean that's what you need. Here's if you want the number one problem with the Twins in the Falvey-Levine era, which has been pretty good, and it's actually the Falvey era, is the development of starting pitchers. Where the hell are they? They came 17, 18, 19, 20, right? Has there been one who wasn't in the system who's in your rotation now? No, right?
Yeah, they've all been, you know, Maeda, Pineda, Odorizzi. Yeah,
and when they do pitch well in playoff games, you might want to not take them out.
Yeah, that's true.
You might want to leave them in.
Also, let's you look at the White Sox, and they got a couple of young ones, but they got about three others that had Tommy John already, and they got about seven of them in the pipeline. And who's your number one pitching prospect here? They don't have a can't miss pitching prospect right now, the Twins. So that Blazevic, I like him. Duran has supposedly got a good arm, and they traded for. But where are these guys? I mean, that's to me. That was supposed to be Falvey's contribution to the Cleveland's, and we haven't seen that part of it here, that's for sure.
Yeah. Pat, we got to run, but we will talk to you again on Friday, sir.
All right, gentlemen.
See you, Royce.
All right, see ya. That's Patrick Royce. You can find his weekly podcast called Royce Unchained with Judd, too, on the Score North new website, scorenorth.com, Apple, and Spotify. Dan Quinn wrote a letter to the city of Atlanta.
Oh, that's nice of him.
I'm good on that. I'm going to read across my timeline.
What's Dan Quinn got?
Sorry for blowing a 4-touchdown lead in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
My bad.
I should have been fired last year. Sorry I stuck around.
Yeah. Sorry about that. That Super Bowl thing.
Now we're 0-5.
I'd like to have that one back.
Unbelievable.
All right. That's a wrap on Mackie and
Judd. I can guarantee you, Zim, if Zim gets shown the door here,
no letter,
will not write a letter to the Twin Cities.
I don't think we need one.
Oh, we don't need, but my point is he will. He would. It'd be two words.
Yeah.
Something you?
Yes. Something you, Zim, out.
Big, big glass of wine. Picture of him chugging a glass of wine.
See ya.
All right, we'll see you guys tomorrow on Mackie and Judd.